Welcome to IBBA Insights, providing expert advice on buying or selling small businesses. IBBA Insights is presented by the International Business Brokers Association, the world's largest nonprofit organization for those helping others sell or buy businesses. Now, here's your host, Chris Diglio.
Hello, I'm your host, Chris Diglio, and we have an exciting show in store for you today. If you're a business broker or just someone who's looking to succeed in your career or in life, you're certainly going to want to listen very closely to today's show. Today, I get the opportunity to pick the brain of one of the top brokers in the entire industry. Last year, she was the top deal maker and top global producer in the entire International Business Brokers Association. And I got to tell you, that is an incredible accomplishment. We're going to find out what she does, how she does it, the reasons behind what makes her a success. And if you can only take one thing from today's show, apply it to your practice, get more listings and close more deals, then this next 30 minutes or so is going to be a huge success for you. My guest today is Courtney Sells, president and founder of the firm Business Brokerage. Courtney is an accomplished businesswoman and an expert in mergers and acquisitions. She's brokered more than 280 transactions since 2010, and she and her skilled team at the firm specialize in pairing owners of existing businesses with qualified buyers. Prior to founding the firm, Courtney founded the Agency 89, a talent agency that became Nebraska's first licensed talent school. She served as president of the agency until its acquisition in 2009. Courtney has also been named Omaha Magazine's Best of Omaha Business Broker of the Year for 9 years running. Her accomplishments have been covered in the Midlands Business Journal, the Daily Record, and Omaha Magazine, as well as on Fox News and CBS Morning Blend. Courtney, welcome.
Hey, Chris, thank you for having me.
I'm excited to have you on. You know, I don't know if you remember this or not, but the first time we met was an impromptu interview at the IBBA conference. You walked off the stage after receiving all the awards and being the top global producer, and I'm not quite sure what the IBBA was thinking, giving me full control of their Facebook page and being able to go live, but we went live and we had a little bit of fun with it.
That was absolutely fun, and we certainly shared it on our page and just got a lot of likes from that. You do a nice job.
Thank you. It was just a lot of fun being in. They had a conference going on and an award ceremony, and you and I were just like, all right, let's have our little interview. So I
would. Oh, absolutely. Point, and what a great job they did doing that ceremony and really the entire weekend. It just was very well done.
I tell the business brokers that are out there that actually win these awards, because there were a lot of people that won the awards that didn't attend the conference. I'm like, you're really missing out, because the experience of the gala and to be in front of your peers and be recognized.
Oh, absolutely.
Get the price tag on that.
Perfect set of speakers, even better set of networking and, you know, understanding best practices of what someone is doing in Canada versus Australia, and, you know, sharing openly what we're doing in the U.S. and really just wanting the best for all of our fellow brokers.
People tell me sometimes, like, do you get paid by the IBBA? I'm like, no, but I've gotten so much from the IBBA, and because of the IBBA and the people involved throughout my career, I've been able to do very well. And I'm a big believer, if you're a business broker, you have nothing but things to benefit by going to a conference. And again, the courses are great, and the people of the IBBA are great, and the workshops are incredible, and you learn best practices. But what's really fun is afterwards sitting at the bar or going to a restaurant around the world and learning what they're doing. That excites me.
Oh, and you know, even the aftermath, I've spoke and emailed back and forth, and whether it's someone sending me their book or them and I scheduling a conference call, it's really just been all of the relationships that have been nurtured after the conference. So definitely looking forward to the event and next year in Louisville at the weekend before the Kentucky Derby.
We should all just stay around and hit the Derby. So it would be a lot of fun.
I'm staying with you. Absolutely. We'll get you out of hurricane season and let's watch some ponies.
Exactly. Well, let's jump into the interview, because I've been excited since after the conference. I asked you if you'd be willing to come on the show, and you said yes. So I'm very excited to talk to you and ask you certain things, specifically about your journey into business brokerage. I mean, this is a profession typically dominated by older males, and you've broken down all the barriers, and you're an inspiration to not just younger people and females wanting to get in this industry. Can you share with them your story?
Sure, absolutely. And yes, we are a team of 18 professionals, all of us being female. So certainly we have broke the barrier. Our tagline is the plan you needed, the partner you didn't expect. And one of our biggest core values, of course, is being boldly different. And so we strive to do that every day. How I got into business brokering, kind of a fun story. You had mentioned in my introduction that I had founded Agency 89. So what we did is we put together ad campaigns and commercials, radio, runway. So we developed the talent, and then we had clients that would use the talent, and often we would be helping do that creative. I had a gentleman, Alan was his first name, and he owned an Anytime Fitness, a client of ours for many years. And he called me and he said, Courtney, you've helped my business. We're over 1,000 members. Couldn't have done it without your creative and all of the ad campaigns you did and your talent did for us. But I'm retiring this year, and so I'm closing the gym. And I thought, well, what the heck? There's got to be something better. And he said, no. You know, I'm in a leased space, and I'm just going to sell my equipment on Craigslist, and I'm shutting it down when my lease expires. Selfishly, I thought, well, shoot, this is one of my larger clients. I don't want to lose this monthly revenue. So I thought strategically, and we had personal trainers that helped our talent, you know, stay fit and stay active. So I reached out to them and said, hey, I know this guy who's retiring and he's got a gym and there's all these members and this great equipment. And by the way, I'll do all the ad campaigns. And so they were introduced to a bank, and sure enough, 60 days later, they were the new owners of the Anytime Fitness. And I thought, wow, that was pretty neat. And I'm going to shorten this story, but about 2 weeks later, similar story happened. The salon that did all of the hair and the makeup for the talent that we had, they were going through a divorce, and the husband and wife decided they were just going to close up shop. And I thought, well, shoot, we love these stylists. We've been going here for years. So I told them, well, let me see if I can find someone to buy you. Again, selfishly thinking, I need this to benefit me. It will benefit them. It's a win-win. And that's absolutely what happened. A month later, we had an owner for the salon, and everybody was happy. So as I grew in my career at the talent agency, and we knew that it would be better to sell, I really wanted to explore what I had done over the years, which was putting deals together. Frankly, I didn't even know that that was being a business broker or what merger and acquisition was, but I knew I was pretty good at it. And there it started.
Yeah, they say a business broker or a business intermediary is the best kept secret that's out there, because so many people, like you mentioned, that I talked to, they're like, I didn't know you existed, and they're going to close their business down. I'm like, something is worth better than nothing. Let's see what the market will bear.
Absolutely. And I think that I took that and I thought, gosh, I really liked that win-win. And was it hard to get there? And were there hurdles? Absolutely. But what I found is that it's all about the psychology. And yes. So if you can work really hard to get the other side what they want, then you're going to get what you want. And so I find so often when we're having attorneys on each side and it's almost like they're in litigation, I, you know, gently and calmly remind them, we're not in litigation. These two, business owner and buyer, have to work long after the intermediary is gone, the attorneys and the accountants and the lender. And so let's find what's really important to the other side and let's give that to them. And that's going to be so much easier to get what we want if we can just give a little. And that's really what we've done extremely well at, is putting the psychology into selling businesses.
Well, you have two attorneys in a room, they're looking to win. And in a business transaction, there can't be a winner and a loser. There need to be two winners. So yeah, you have to find
Absolutely.
The common ground. And a lot of times it's not price. It could be something
right.
You need to understand what is important to the buyer. What's the motivation
exactly
of the seller?
Right.
And once you can do that, you'll overcome the boundaries and the barriers, and you'll have a closing.
Right. And so often, you know, if we're working with another organization and they're so price dependent, it's really just not what makes people tick. And I think that's so important. We have an entire division. It's our portfolio division, and the women that are in that group, they are so talented. But what they do is, in those first introductory interview calls, we're saying, imagine who's going to take over that business. What does that look like? How long are you going to stay in transition in this perfect scenario? We call it a sacred cow. Is there something that you really just don't want to change? And so we make sure that, you know, if this person really doesn't want to transition more than 6 months, okay, maybe we can come down a little bit on price so that way they can, you know, go do their second chapter and get on the golf course or whatever it may be. But you have to find what is the true desire. And I think that the other thing you have to be very good at from a psychology standpoint is understanding the decision maker. And that oftentimes is not the business owner.
That's true.
It might be their adult children or their wife at home or maybe a minority business partner. And so at the end of the day, you want to be able to sell that business. You're going to have to speak to them in a way that you know they're playing the telephone game so that way they can speak to that secondary person.
Courtney, I'll never forget what my pastor told me about 25 years ago. He said, God gave us two ears and one mouth. And he told us that means we're supposed to listen twice as much as we talk. And I think that goes in line right exactly what you were saying, that if we sometimes would just take the time and we would listen to our clients rather than just trying to talk over them and try to prove to them how smart we are, we would hear what they're saying. We would understand what their needs are. And we could take that and we can utilize it to getting the job done for everybody and actually having a closing and selling their
Amen.
Business.
Absolutely. I think another thing to think about is these business owners, you know, we're taking away their time when we're on these different buyer-seller meetings. And so what I always, you know, have to be front of mind of is try to answer all of those questions to your buyer client. And of course, you know, they always ask, so how many employees? And you're going, wait a minute, I went over that with you 100 times. You know that there's 45 employees or whatever it might be. And so what I always do, and this is a good tip for those listening, is I get the buyer on the phone 15 minutes prior to the seller. So if I'm scheduling a dial-in for 1:30, I'm telling that buyer that the call starts at 1:15, unbeknownst to them that the seller is on at 1:30. So that way, as we're having conversation, they start getting some of those generic questions that I know I've already answered, but I don't want to waste my business owner's time. And so I take that 15 minutes to get those questions we all know that we answer and are all on the front page of our business reviews. Then by the time the seller is on, we're already getting into the meat and potatoes. And now I've just taken that call from an hour to 30 or 40 minutes because I did all that cursory before he even got on. And I'll tell you, that has worked really well for us.
It's all about being prepared. I got into the business when I was 28 years old, and last month, July of 2019, I celebrated my 20th year in the business. And along the way, I've seen so many people. Thank you so much. I mean, I've seen so many people throughout the years get into the business and they fail. And then there was a common theme. I would hear people say, if I could just survive my first year in business brokerage, and it would make me so angry. I'm like, why do you want to survive? Don't you want to thrive? So right. It bothered me so much that I wrote a course for the IBBA, an 8-hour course that now is online. And it was thriving, not surviving your first year in business brokerage.
Good for you.
And sharing things that worked for me. So you've shared a couple of things of secrets to your success. What else would you say to somebody that's out there that's getting into this business that would help them be successful, that's helped you?
One of the things that makes our organization a lot different than most M&A firms or business brokerages is that oftentimes business brokerages run as a real estate office. So the staff is all 1099 subcontractors. And as a entrepreneur just starting out, that oftentimes helps, right? Okay, I'm just going to pay them a certain fee and then some comes to the house and I'll pay the overhead and the bills, but at least I'm not paying them to be in their office. Well, I thought, gosh, going back to that surviving and not thriving, that means I'm going to get a group of people that just want to come in and shove a square into a circle as quickly as they can to go get a commission check. And then I'm left with the aftermath 3 months or 6 months or a year down the road when that business owner, the buyer, is now the business owner, and it just isn't a good deal. I thought, forget it. I don't want to have my people trying to survive and doing bad deals, or maybe not bad, but quick deals for our clients. And so though I've had to sell my car to make payroll, I remember one winter, my husband and I were 8 months pregnant. Our daughter was born in January, so it was Christmas. I said, okay, we have the money to either pay the electric at the office or to pay the electric at our house. And of course, we had to choose the office. That's what paid the bills. So for the entire month of December, we slept in the office, 8 months pregnant. And, you know, you look back on those times, and all I wanted to do is make sure that I had enough money to make payroll, to be able to hire professionals that were paid 8 to 5, a salary pay, as opposed to coming to work and trying to throw something together and do a quick deal rather than a good deal. So my people, yes, are, you know, now we've grown and grown, but from the beginning, I've never had a 1099 subcontractor or an agent. I've always had someone who every week is getting paid. So that way they knew that their families were taken care of and they could be a better person at work doing what was perhaps right for the client and not right for them as a parent. And that served us really well. So like I said, now we're just under 20 folks, and we are like a big family. In fact, we call it the firm family. That's a different topic that I wanted to bring up. So one is that if you can do it, if you can just try to hire 2 or 3 people, I started out with 2 and, you know, then grew to 4 and 6. And if you can just have those full-time or 3/4-time people that don't have to survive, but they can thrive, I think it's going to serve you very, very well. So that's number one. But once we have that team, probably what's done the best for me is giving back to the women who I work with. So I'll give you an example of our firm family. The last Friday before school started, I rented out a theme park. Now our theme parks aren't like your theme parks in Florida.
Okay.
We're going to have to sell more businesses before I can do that.
All right.
So we rented out a small theme park, and everybody's families came, and in a couple of weeks here, Halloween is upon us, and we rent out a pumpkin patch, and everybody's families come. And so really once every other month, I get everybody's family and kids and grandkids together. We play volleyball during the summer on a league. We do charity work together. So we got dirty and played mud volleyball for breast cancer. And I could go on and on and on, but culture is key. And there's such a shortage of labor that once you find these good people, you just want to keep them and nurture them. And to the younger generation, those that are in their 20s and 30s, they aren't as motivated by money as maybe those in their 40s, 50s were. And of course, 60s and 70s were from the time that it was all about loyalty. You know, people would have the same career 40 and 50 years. But in today's age, it's so much about feeling a part of something. And I think if you do go the route that we have and really wanting to graduate into that holistic firm approach, you've got to make sure that there's that culture and there's that family feeling to it.
It all starts at the top with you. And you're right. People have to feel like they're part of it, because if they don't, they're not going to buy in. And it has to be sincere, because if it's not sincere, they'll see right through it. So kudos to you for doing that. I know there's a change going on within our industry. There are other companies. I know my good friend and a past chairman of the IBBA, Lou Vesio, he does that with his firm over in Melbourne, Florida. And so I know people are looking at that more and more, saying, you know what? We sell businesses every day, but we don't run our business like a business, and maybe we should.
Right.
And it's showing, right. It's paying dividends.
Yes, and I love to hear that, and I also love Lou.
Oh, Lou's great. We could do a whole show on Lou, but we're not going.
We should do a whole show on Lou.
I will do.
I'll be your co-host. That'd be
Lou,
great.
I know you're listening. We're going to get you on again. We've had you on before. You know, so clearly you don't wing it. Okay, so you have a process, or you wouldn't be as successful as you are. Share with the brokers or the audience out there, you know, what is part of your process that you and your team look to do with your clients?
So I'm going to sidebar that, and the fact that everything we do is process based. But a long time ago, I learned that if you can't measure it, you can't manage it. So everything that my organization does is measured down to the calls that come in, the calls that go out. We know that we have to have a certain number in pending in order to get X amount to close, because as we all know, they do fall apart for reasons that are out of our control. I understand that if I do a social media ad, or depending on how many different deals that we get, how many buyers I'm going to have to show that business to before I get an offer, how many offers I'm going to have to get on that business before I'm going to get an exception. So over the years, we've kept extremely detailed track of 26 KPIs, so key performance indicators. And anybody who's listening, email me, csells@thefirmb2b.com. I'm more than happy to send you what we call our scorecard. Every Friday from 3 to 4 p.m., I know everybody's tired. They come sluggishly into our boardroom. We get out our scorecard that's 26 cells across, and we go through them one by one by one. And at the end of that 30-minute scorecard power meeting, people are laughing and cheering and clapping, and it is the most invigorating meeting. I've heard from so many business owners, never have a meeting on Friday. I'll tell you what, I want my people walking out of here with their head held high, being very proud, going home and telling their families, oh my gosh, we got 24 out of our 26 KPIs. This year, we've got our KPIs hit 3 times, which I know that doesn't sound very good. Gosh, you've only hit 26 across 3 times in a row, but it's hard.
That sounds great, actually.
And so we, you know, there's a big celebration. And last time I gave everybody a day at the spa, because they hit every single one, meaning you have to get X amount of listing agreements, X amount of closings, X amount of offers. It's process.
Listening to you, you have me so excited that I want to come and I want to sit in on one of these meetings. I just want to experience it.
Oh my gosh. It is a hoot. We start with a communication starter, you know, for the first 5 minutes. And I just had a birthday, August, this past summer. And one of my staff, they gave me it's a board game. It's called Silicon Valley Startup. And this Friday we'll be playing. It's too bad we don't have a YouTube channel, because I think it will be pretty funny. You have to pitch the most crazy things, but I think it will be good networking. It's a good communication starter. But that gets everybody's energy up. And then we go through those KPIs. And then we go through what are the goals of next week. But the most important thing that we do in that meeting is what was a learning situation. And so this is really where you're telling your peers and you're telling the boss something that you totally messed up. And believe me, I could come to that meeting with 20 of them every week. But I want to scream from the rooftop my mistake, because how the heck am I going to train my people if they're not going to be able to know that you make a mistake, you bring it front and center, you correct it, and let others learn from it. So we end the week on what did I mess up? So I don't want you to do the same thing. And I think that everybody in every organization should do that. It makes it okay to fail. And if you're not failing, you're not learning.
I had a client of mine who became a very good friend. But at one point before we became friends and we were just a client, I remember him yelling at me. And he goes, I can't believe you made that mistake. I go, well, if you wait around just a little while longer, I will make another mistake. I said, because I'm human and I will make mistakes, plenty of them. I said, but what defines a person is not that they make mistakes, it's what they do about those mistakes. And
absolutely,
you know, hopefully I don't make the same mistake twice. And by the end of the conversation, he and I were laughing and he was telling me all the things that he's done wrong. But yeah, I mean,
there you go.
We're not going to be perfect, but we should be perfect at trying to make things right, which we did wrong.
Absolutely. And I think everybody grows from humility.
Yeah, I tell my agents all the time, I'm like, look, you better have an ego to be in this business, but check your ego at the door, because there's times to have one and times where you just need to be as humble as can be. And, you know, it's not about you. It's about the best interest of the deal and the clients and the people involved. And that's what's most important. So when it comes to marketing, Courtney, what is it that you specialize or you focus on, as far as are there industries you go after? Are there different platforms that you utilize more than others?
One of the things that we've been successful with, and I don't know, by the grace of God, I'm sure that that helped. Good timing, I suppose. We had a client 7 years ago, and he was a Nebraska native, went to West Point. He was the, I don't want to say this wrong, he helped with ops for the Navy SEALs. And after West Point, and then after doing ops for the SEALs, he went to Harvard Business School. So when he came back to Omaha, we had just been featured in, you had spoke about it earlier, it's called the Daily Record. And that is the Midwest's largest legal newspaper. And so as we all know, when you start a corporation, you have to make sure that it gets published. And so that's where all of the attorneys and businesses get published. So at any rate, I was on the cover of that paper. And at the same time, a business owner that was looking to sell, he was in his CPA's office. His CPA is the one who had the Daily Record, in the front lobby. And so he said, hey, I'm reading about this girl. And so sure enough, the CPA's name's Tom, called me and said, we've got this GIS business that we want to sell. And it was a multi-million dollar deal. That's the first over $5 million deal that I'd done. And I am not kidding. Within 3 days, Joe, my Harvard grad, had called and said, hey, Courtney, I see that you're the up and coming merger and acquisition. You know, it was only our third year in business, second and third year in business. And wouldn't you know that the stars just aligned? And he said, I've been in ops for the SEALs, and I was in Afghanistan, and I had to plan all of their mapping. Well, that's exactly what GIS is that I had just learned about 3 days before. So I'm sharing that story with you because a lot of it was just getting ourselves out there. Had I not been in the Daily Record, because we have a really great marketing team and we're always sending out press releases to local and regional papers and media outlets and doing podcasts just like this one, had we not been sent thank you cards and letters and our publication to all these different CPA offices, the CPA wouldn't have said, oh yeah, I've seen her firm, I've seen her things, I've seen her up and coming, and then given the nod to have the client call. Had we not had a really good website and image, Joe, graduating from Harvard, would not have found us and said, okay, you guys look like you're the real deal. You've spent a lot of money and time on your website, and it's modern, and he really liked that. And I'm not kidding you. He was the first buyer I showed it to. That never happens as a fellow intermediary. And we closed the deal 6 months later. And that really helped to put us on the map with the Harvard Business School. So since then, we've sold to more than a dozen. In fact, we've sold to 13 different HBS graduates. So we've got a really nice program with them. We have just done a really nice job of nurturing those CPAs and those attorneys that when we're doing a deal, that we really make sure they know that we're the intermediary and we are focused on the win-win. And that way, the next time, just like Tom, you know, he'll refer us all day, every day. And his firm is, you know, over 40 different CPAs work there. So I think it's just nurturing those relationships. And as long as you've got that staff that's not trying to survive, but they're thriving, they're not going to put together a quick and dirty deal. They're going to do what's right for the client. And so that's how we've marketed, just by being professional and ethically driven and boldly different.
I learned at a seminar at a very young age, they were talking about how to succeed in business. And one statement that was made that I'll never forget, the gentleman said, if you don't differentiate yourself from your competition, all you're going to do is compete on price. Because then if you're not different than your competition, then who has the best price? So what you've done is exactly right. I've been through your website. I've talked with you. I mean, you've differentiated yourself from your competition. You do things different, but you do it in a professional manner and you get the job done. And that's what's most important. Can you get the job done?
You've got to be able to perform, and you've got to do what you're say, what do what you say you're going to do. But just like you just said, you've got to be different. And different doesn't mean crazy. It just means memorable. You've got to be able to make your mark and leave an impression and disrupt your market a little bit. Don't always do it the same way just because it's always been done that way. You know, push that line and be you. At a very early age, my mother always said, the best thing you can do is not copy someone else. And so I would come home, oh, Susie Q has a pink dress. I want a pink dress. Oh, no, I want to cut my bangs in my hair. My mother would say, we're going to do it exactly different than everybody else. We're not ever going to be a follower. We're going to be a leader. You're going to be a trendsetter. And it's just, it's stuck with me.
Good for her. That's sound advice. I mean, why be a follower, right? There are plenty of followers. There are only so many leaders. And it's like I have people come up to me sometimes, fellow brokers, even in my general area, and they've said to me before, well, you have the CBI designation or you were overseeing the CBI, but I don't see any benefit because sellers don't know who what a CBI is. And I said, well, they do when I get through with them, because when I sit down and I give my pitch, and you better hope that, you know, I don't go before that. I don't, you know, that you're not.
No, you don't go before someone who's not. Yeah, sure.
Because what's going to happen is, at the end of the meeting, they're going to understand what a CBI is, what a certified business intermediary is, how difficult it is to get, and how many of them there are in the nation. Okay. And by then, they're going to understand the meaning of the designation. So sometimes it's all about what we do and what we say. How are you different than the competition? See, I don't need to bash anybody else because I just don't believe in that. But, you know, I have to make it on my own merits and what I can do and how I can do it. And I believe you're the same way. It's not so much about what everyone else is doing. This is what we do.
Right.
And this is how we do it.
Absolutely.
I love that. I mean, I think that's great. I think work ethic has a lot to do with it, Courtney. You know, everything doesn't just come to us or doesn't just happen. Sometimes it's the things we do and we have to make it happen. Talk a little bit about your work ethic and what you do on a day-to-day basis to make things happen.
So work ethic is one of my favorite things to talk about. It started when I was 7 years old, and our grandparents wanted all of us to show cattle, probably because my grandfather did, and then my mother and all my aunts and uncles. And what you know, this year is my daughter, her first time showing cattle. But being raised in a barn is like starting at 5 a.m. and ending at 9 p.m. And it's always about taking care of everything that needs to be taken care of and not complaining, because nobody cares, because everybody has a complaint. And I say that in the nicest way, but being shipped out to my grandmother's house with my sister and all of my cousins, and from Memorial weekend until Labor Day weekend, getting up and cleaning stalls and taking care of your 1,300-pound steer when you were a 60-pound kid, it put the work ethic into us. And just as a quick story, you know, I like to think that I'm very good at what I do in entrepreneurship. I then have a sister, and she has always wanted to be a mother. She has 5 kids, and I am telling you, she is like mom of the year. So I tell her, you took being a mom, and you took it to 5 kids, PTA, soccer coach, this, that, and the other. And my little brother always wanted to serve our country, so he became a Marine, but then he became a special operator. And so similar to a Navy SEAL, he's what you call MARSOC. So special ops of Marines. And, you know, I'll joke with my parents and say, gosh, you had to push us all to be the best entrepreneur, the best mother, and the best Marine that we could be. And I think it all comes down to work ethic and how we were raised. We had to buy our own car and buy our own clothes. And if we wanted a hot lunch because we didn't want to make our own cold lunch, well, must have been because we did something for the neighbor, mowed their lawn, or kept that cattle money from showing. I will tell you that I use that in my hiring process. So I will interview, and I don't generally go with the smartest, and I try never to go with someone with direct industry experience because I don't want to break bad habits. I try to go with someone who's just hard working and that is going to stay here until the job is done, and is going to do what I did when I was little, and you don't complain and you do it for the greater good. And I will tell you, the women I have on my team, every one of them is like that. We call it curfew. It'll be on Thursday, and I know they've all hit 40 hours, and we still have an 8-hour day the next day. And so I put curfew in place because I've got to literally kick these ladies out of their office because of their dedication and their work ethic. So I would hire work ethic over intelligence, though I do think my women are very intelligent. Hire work ethic over intelligence or industry experience any day. And I think that the clients really can see that too when we're emailing them from our phone at 8 or 9 at night, because we know they're nervous and anxiety filled for their closing the next day or whatever it might be. But definitely work ethic is something that you should use in hiring when it comes to being an intermediary.
Work ethic is important, and it's contagious, and it starts from the top. If you didn't have good work ethic, how could you ask the people that work underneath you to have it? So they're only going to be or willing to do the things that they see their leader or the person that's leading the way do. And so I think that's extremely important. And again, I said it earlier, kudos to you. I mean, it's clear of one thing when I talk to you. I mean, you have a passion for this business and a desire to succeed and a desire to want to help people. And I think passion and wanting to help people and really caring, if you have those things, you're going to do well in this business, because yes, you have to have knowledge, you have to have industry experience, but give me someone that's willing to work hard and someone that's willing to learn. That's the person I want, because you can help mold them and you can help guide them. Right. I've brought on brokers before that had all the experience in the world, and sometimes you have to break old habits. I'd rather have somebody that knows nothing about business brokerage sometimes than someone that feels like they know everything.
All day, every day. 100%, because you don't, you know, every brokerage is so different. And to me, I don't want someone's, you know, bad habits. I will tell you that the people that work here at the firm, we generally, if there is you'll see tears if that seller is crying on closing day. And I know we've all seen it. It's their baby. They've just sold, you know, that they've put together for the last 40 years of their lives. There won't be a dry eye here, because we do care. Yeah. We just do. Or that first time buyer that, you know, was in corporate America forever and did it, you know, took the $200,000 out of his 401k and put it all on the line. And the wife is here and the kids are here. And closing, we make a huge deal out of, whether it's a $30,000 closing or a $3 million closing. We always have champagne and a little video, because we want them to know that this is their day. And we're all here to celebrate.
It's a celebration. Courtney, I could talk to you all day, and we could probably do a show together and have a lot of fun with it. So I will, I'll tell you what, the one last thing I always like to ask, and I really want to ask it of you today, because I think it's important to the listeners out there. What advice would you give to brokers who are out there that are struggling to gain traction in this business that's, you know, extremely difficult? What advice would you?
Very difficult. I would let you know that you're not alone, and no one gets into this and has it easy. At least I haven't met that person. First year is the hardest year. Get through that. Try to do right by the client and not right by your own pocketbook. And, you know, as we started the conversation, find what the win is and work harder to get the other side's win, and yours will come.
Wow, Courtney, I got to tell you, that's some great stuff. I mean, this whole interview has been awesome. I mean, if you're a business broker right now and you're listening and you're not jumping out of your seat and you're not excited and you don't feel, or you're not feeding off of Courtney's energy, there's something wrong with you. Check your pulse. You might not be alive. You got to feel it. It's great. Courtney, I appreciate how open you were and sharing with everyone today. And the information you gave us, all of us, me included, is invaluable. And I hope everyone, including myself, applies it to their business so they can make more money. I can't thank you enough for coming on today's show and being so giving. I mean, I look forward to seeing you at the IBBA conferences again, doing some more interviews. I wish you the best of luck in keeping up the great work that you've done. You truly deserve all the success that you've achieved. And if someone wants to get in touch with you, your website, or how does someone get in touch with you if they're looking for more information?
And in closing, I wanted to certainly thank the IBBA and Chris. You've just done an excellent job, and I look forward to hearing this podcast and can't wait to hear the next guy that you get in the hot seat. you can look at the firm B2B That's thefirmb2b.com. Or certainly shoot me an email. I am an open book. The more you can raise somebody else up, the better it is. And getting this entire industry to really shine, I think, lets us all shine. So you can email me at csells@thefirmb2b.com. I just want to thank you for your time today.
Courtney, thanks a lot. Well, I tell you what, everyone, ladies and gentlemen, I hope you feel blessed to have the guest that we had on today, because she was very open, very sharing. And that's the kind of guest that we like to have on our show. Someone that's here to share with you and share information, things that have helped
Please
them.
Share it with others on your social media platforms and help us spread the word. For more information on our show or to listen to more episodes, visit us at IBBA.org.
I appreciate you listening. This show is for you. Put on by the International Business Brokers Association, and we're happy to be here. I am your host, Chris Diglio, and I look forward to talking with you again on the next episode